Well, thanks, Tim, and good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
So tonight we're going to be looking at overcoming habitual sin. Big thanks to the committee for suggesting this topic, because it's one of those ones that I know some of you have already heard this in our senior CYC or some of the material, but it is one of those topics which you're going to need to come back to over and over again in your life. Even when we get as old as Uncle Skip and Uncle James, it's still just as relevant as a topic. What do we mean when we talk about habitual sin versus just any old sin? Well, in reality, the principles of forgiveness is all the same. It requires true repentance. We've got to confess. We come to God in prayer. Incidentally, prayer is going to be a big part of this, but because Jay's speaking on this in one of the other evenings, we're not going to touch on that territory tonight. But the Bible does give special attention as well to those scenarios where we may find ourselves not just in a one-off sin, which is still something that needs to be addressed, but we may become trapped in this habit and we become more discouraged, more humiliated, and we just feel like giving up. We feel too ashamed to go to God to ask for help because I already asked for forgiveness 100 times and here I am making the same mistake again. But the good news is that God knows what we're going through, and he has devised an entire plan because he wants us to overcome. He wants us to come in that right way for forgiveness, to conquer sin, and by grace be in the kingdom when Christ returns. Even great men and women of faith struggle with this. The Apostle Paul, of all people, he says, "I delight in the law of God after the inward man, but I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind, bringing me into captivity, the law of sin which is in my members." So you may look around and say, well, everybody else just seems to have their stuff together. You know, they're really spiritually focused and no one's struggling like me and making the same continual sins. Just a tip, maybe it seems like that because we all feel exactly the same way as you do and we're too humiliated to tell everybody, hey, here's what I'm struggling with. And to a certain extent, maybe that's part of the solution, is actually finding someone we can confide in, someone we can help to keep us accountable to do a better job in doing the things that we know to be true. But God wants us to overcome. So tonight we're just going to spend a few minutes going over some simple Bible principles, some simple practical things that you can even put into practice tonight. If you're struggling with sin right now, then tonight, if you really want to break free, tonight there's some things we can put in place. This can be the turning point. And there is such a huge relief when you commit with God to make that change. So first off, the first thing we've got to do is be honest with ourselves and be honest with God. We all know what it's like to have that nagging voice at the back of our head that there's something that we're leaving undone that has to be addressed. And we can be pretty good at pushing that away. And as our conscience becomes seared, we can go for longer periods of time where we don't actually think about it. Not always, but sometimes we can actually become really firm or strong or even strict in other areas of our life as if somehow it's going to compensate for this area that we're struggling in and don't want to deal with. David is actually a classic example of that, of a person just like you and me. But he was a faithful man. God loved him, but the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? An example of David, he had sex with another man's wife. And then he tried to cover it up by murdering that person. And then he was so overcome by that sin, he couldn't go to God. We don't know how long, but for a long period of time, he didn't go to God with this. But he was very critical in other areas of life. So when Nathan the prophet comes to him and says, David, there was this man who had one sheep. He actually loved it. It was like a family member, a family pet. And then the neighbor had hundreds of sheep, had company over, and he comes and takes the guy's one sheep, kills it, slaughters it, and they feasted on that. David was livid. He was so angry. You can just see him stomping like, we know what the law prescribes for this, and he wanted judgment immediately. And then Nathan's like, well, David, you're that man. Like, you're doing exactly that sin. You can see it in someone else, but you're not seeing it in yourself. So we need to, first off, be honest with God. Stop pushing it away. Under inspiration, we get some insight into some of the things that David experienced and what he concluded. So Psalm 139, we don't have time to go through these, but if you want to make a note of them, 139 verses 7 to 11, that's that section where David says, well, where can I hide from God? If I go to the heavens, he's there. If I go to the deepest part of the sea, he's there. If I go into a dark cave, like, God's everywhere. And in verse 2, He says, it doesn't matter how far away I go, you can see into my thoughts. You know exactly what I'm thinking, the good, the bad, the ugly. And even when I say something, you already knew what I was going to say. So the reality is, whatever you're going through or have gone through or might find yourself trapped in at some point, God knows. He's just waiting for you to acknowledge it so you can work together with him in overcoming it. In Psalm 32, it describes what life was like when in this period where he wouldn't confess to God. You know, we can do really well. We fill our lives with so many busy things so we don't have to think about our problems or our conscience. But then sometimes we're awake at night and we can't sleep and these things are weighing on us. And David said, my bones waxed old. It was like a rottenness in him. But when he goes on to talk about finally coming clean with God, there was this peace, this relief. It's out in the open because God does have a solution. So how do you be honest with God? This is just a suggestion, is to actually write it down. This actually works in a lot of things in life, whether you're stressed about something, just start by writing it down, at least get it on paper, or maybe you've got a goal you want to accomplish and you're not getting there, write it down. But this also really is helpful when you're struggling with a sin. Actually put it down on paper and acknowledge that you're struggling with something. So maybe it's, I have problem with anger. Like I'm always snapping at people. I've got a short fuse. If that's something that's got to be dealt with, write it down. That's the first part. Maybe it's something more serious. Maybe it is, I have a problem with alcohol or substance abuse of some sort. Or brothers and young men, maybe it's, I have a problem with internet pornography. Whatever it is, be honest with yourself and be honest with God. Write it down. And I shouldn't just say brothers and young men, because this is young men, old men, everyone. You talk to people, it's a problem. All these things. So write it down. And you may think, well, I don't want anyone to see. What if I lose this piece of paper? Burn it when you're done. That's okay. But go through that effort of putting down on paper, this is a problem. I'm confronting it, and I'm going to confront it with God. And incidentally, if you burn it, there's actually a certain satisfaction, especially because if you commit to work with God, that's effectively what's going to happen to that sin. God says that he is prepared to put our sins as far as the east is from the west. It's done if we truly repent. While you're being honest with yourself, write down what things trigger that. These are the things that trigger the temptation. This is the environment when it usually happens. These are the things that make it hardest to overcome. It's easier to overcome when. So I'm not suggesting you have to do that right now, but I encourage you, being at a camp at a time when you're pretty focused, you're pretty excited, you're surrounded by good people or people who have the same desire, like Precious Faith, it's a good time to confront these things in private, and if the fire's on, you can toss it on later. But if you just come to James chapter 1, one of the reasons why it's good to be honest with yourself about some of the triggers is because James chapter 1, it describes this process of temptation, and it tells us that there's this very narrow window of opportunity when we first are confronted with a temptation, a thought, an impulse, whatever you want to call it. There's a window of opportunity to assess, is this wholesome? Is this something which it's appropriate to pursue? Or is this something that I should shun? It's a very narrow window of opportunity. And if we don't immediately identify it, this is wrong, and I'm not going to do this. If we give it any room, things happen really quickly from that point on, and it's inevitable what's going to happen. So we're going to see why, but we've used an illustration of this fish. There's an initial distraction. Are there any fishers in the camp here? Oh, that's too bad. There should be way more. It's a great way to waste time. But so the fish is initially distracted. What's that flashing thing? And it goes, and it has a unique opportunity to determine, is this safe or is it not? If there's any doubt, that fish needs to get out of there, because if it takes the bait, it's too late, and it will die. So if you just read with me James chapter 1, verses 14 and 15. Okay, James chapter 1, verse 14. Every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust is conceived, it brings forth sin.
and sin, when it's finished, brings forth death.
So just having a quick look at some of those words, this idea of being drawn away, the word means to lure forth. It's a metaphor taken from hunting and fishing, which is why we use this. There is this, we do things when we're hunting or fishing to attract that animal, so we get their attention. That animal has a unique window to decide, is this safe or is it not? If it's not safe, I need to get out of here. Otherwise, we're going to be in trouble. So drawn away, to lure forth, entice is the idea of baiting something or to catch by bait. It doesn't necessarily mean that it was successful, but it's the process of trying to allure, entice something. So we have to decide, is this safe or is it not? And if we identify that this is actually not something that God would like or approve of, if we don't immediately cut that off, if we give it any space, it goes on to say, well, when lust has conceived, now, God is careful with his words. I don't know if you can see that down this low, but it says, the word means to seize, to take one prisoner, to conceive of a woman. A metaphor of lust whose impulses a man indulges. So why would he use this language of conception, where this germination takes place? And once that takes place, well, guess what's going to happen? A baby begins to grow, and it, if it's left to its natural course, it will bring forth a baby. And the word is, it will bring forth sin. The word is to breed forth, to generate, to give birth to. Why does God use that very deliberate language of this connection with a man and a woman? So we cannot let that conception take place. As soon as we identify, we need to turn away. That was specifically for Dan Sargent, the fisherman, but he's not here. Okay, so this wonderful attraction between a man and a woman. It is beautiful. The attraction between a man and a woman and the things that are to be enjoyed in marriage are designed by God. They're a blessing from God. Paul says marriage is honorable in all things. The bed is undefiled. So in the appropriate setting, these are wonderful things. However, when they are indulged in outside of marriage, such as David did with Bathsheba, that is a sin. And throughout the Bible, God keeps drawing upon this analogy as really a parable of this seduction and giving into sin of any sort. So it's not always to do with man-woman things. It can be any type of sin, but this analogy is used. So I need some volunteers here, and I'll choose them in a second. Fabi, someone strong, because I know even blindfolded you could beat me in an arm wrestle, so I need you up here. And then who else can we pick on? Where's Shay? Come on. Okay, so we've got this magnetic attraction, okay? So I need you to hold this. Hold it back here towards the back end, all right? Okay. So everyone can see. You likewise, sideways. Now, did you guys feel anything here at all? Your fingers have to be back farther, please. Okay, yeah. Nothing?
No.
Nothing, okay? I want you to go slowly, just so everyone can have a good view here. Justin, tell me when you feel something and stop. Okay, so you have an immediate, hey, there's an impulse, there's a desire, whatever you want to call it. Is this appropriate or not? Now, if you, I'm not asking you. This is a family show. Now, whatever the temptation is, whatever the scenario is, okay, so get to the point where there is that initial, Now, what I want you to do, I want you to get as close as you can without letting the magnets touch. Okay, so let's try that again. Okay. So tell us when you get to the point where you start to feel something, and then how close can you get? Yeah. Okay. Okay, thank you. So do you see how there's that opportunity? Okay, I feel something, and if you don't back out right away, it's inevitable what's going to happen, right? That's kind of the analogy of that fish. Or not making that choice right away. Don't let anyone ever say, as long as you don't do the sin, you can think about it. No. The word tells us what things are right and wrong, and once we first recognize the situation, is this right or not, you got to make your choice to pull out right away and avoid that situation, whatever it is. So now we're just going to quickly go to Proverbs 7, because here is God, using this analogy of a man being seduced by a woman, but that's not really what it's about. It's a parable of any type of sin that a man or woman could be drawn into, which may or may not be of a sexual nature. But listen to the pattern, because we can learn from this. If we can see this as a pattern of any type of sin, then we can also go to the lives of faithful individuals who overcame this type of temptation and use their secret of success to tackle any temptation that comes our way. So, in verse 7 of Proverbs 7, "Behold, I beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding, passing through the streets near her corner, and he went the way to her house." It didn't say he was going to her house. It said he passed by near her corner. There's a magnet on the corner. He's walking along. And somehow, the next thing we know, he's on his way to her house. Look what happens in the next verse. "In the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night." Now, what does that mean? So, right now it's twilight. A little while, not like an hour ago maybe, you could see really clearly a person's walking across the grounds here. I recognize that person. Right now, we're just looking at shadows. It's really hard to see exactly what I'm looking at or who that is. In one verse, it goes from evening to twilight to black midnight. Other translations talk about the blackness of midnight. And when we think about the light of the word being our guide, if we don't immediately sense, is this situation right or wrong? All of a sudden, we have a moment to respond to what we know is true. Otherwise, you know from your own experience, you block out the truth, and all of a sudden you just focus on this thing that you know you shouldn't do, but that's all you can think about. It goes to blindness, to blackness. Okay, so if that is a parable of any type of sin, then we should be able to go to heroes like Joseph, who overcame that kind of temptation, and use his recipe to tackle whatever type of sin it is you're against. So very quickly, in Genesis chapter 39, everybody knows this story. Let's just go through it briefly, though, and highlight how he overcame. Eventually, we know he flees, but what was the thought process that he went through that we can adopt? So Genesis 39 and in verse 7, "It came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, 'Lie with me.' But he refused." Why did he not refuse? Every one of us looks forward to having a relationship with someone of the opposite sex, and then eventually having a family, etc. So why would he refuse that? Well, what's the thought process? He says, "Behold, my master wots not what is with me in the house. He's committed all that he has to my hand. There's none greater in his house than I. Neither has he kept back anything from me but thee, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" So first step is he refused the temptation, clearly identifying why it would be a sin against God. So when you have that first thought, you got to decide, is this right or is it not? It's to be a sin against God because of this. And vocalize that or verbalize that in your head, whatever you've got to do, but acknowledge what it is. And so then he makes his choices based on that. In verse 10, "It came to pass as he spake to Joseph, she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or even to be with her." So he's going to avoid any type of temptation. I don't want to have that magnetic pull. He didn't even walk past her corner, to use the language of Proverbs 7. But what about when you find yourself in a situation where you don't want to be? What do you do? "It came to pass in verse 11 about this time that Joseph went to the house to do his business, and there was none of the men in the house. And she caught him by his garment, saying, 'Lie with me.' He left his garment in her hand and fled and got out." Why do you think Joseph did that? He's like, "I'm trying to write notes and you keep bumping me." Or do you think maybe that he was trying to escape temptation? I'll leave that with what you will, but I don't have a problem thinking that David was getting himself out of a very dangerous situation that he did not want to give into. So when he found himself in danger of giving in, he took drastic measures to flee the situation. So those are the thought process we can go with anything, any type of sin. But in addition to just avoiding things, we've got to make sure we're filling it with the right things. So in Philippians 4, if there be any virtue, if there be any love, whatever all those different things are, think on these things, fill our minds with. Choose the right people to spend your time with who are going to help you to think on these things. And if you are struggling with something, confess your fault to the right person. You don't want to go broadcasting your sins. That's not necessarily helpful. But choose someone who you know can help you to be honest about dealing with this sin. Otherwise, in Matthew 12, it talks about the Pharisees who they would all don't do this, don't do that. They would cut everything out of their lives, but they never filled it with anything wholesome. So you just create a vacuum and you're more likely to just give in to some other sin. So nothing here is new at all. It's all straightforward stuff. So we've got four quick scenarios. You've only got 90 seconds for each one, just to brainstorm in a little huddle of what you would do. So you've got your pen and paper out and you're by yourself and you admit, I have a problem with recreational drugs or alcohol. They're nice people that from school or work just hang out, on the weekend. I don't even mean to participate in it, but somehow I've offered a few times and then I eventually accept it, and then I find out that I behaved myself or spoke in a way which is just totally inappropriate, and I don't want to do it, but it just keeps happening. So spin around with a few people. You got 90 seconds to figure out what would you do. Thinking of the Joseph principles there, all the steps you take into account. Okay, time's up. What are some ideas? Anybody? What ideas did you have?
Verbalize your, once you've identified what the sin against God is, verbalize it to people that are offering you drugs and alcohol.
Okay. Anybody else? Cipriotti? Sorry. Okay, yeah, is that the best crowd to be hanging around in? So that's a good thing when you think about who are my close friends going to be. I mean, you obviously, when you're at school, at work, there's people that you interact with. But in your own time, or we talked about last year, if you're going to go off to college or university, are you going to choose roommates who are going to bring that lifestyle in front of you all the time? If you're trying to avoid sin, then the people you choose to surround yourself with are gonna make a big difference.
I was gonna say confess to a friend.
Yeah, okay, so I'm struggling with this. So I think all those are good, and you probably need a combination of all those things. Maybe questioning whether that's the right group, and then,
Not only confessing, but maybe asking to be held accountable. So, Josh is suggesting,
Yeah. Great. So any last items?
Say pray.
Pray? Yeah, so if you're going to if you think it's appropriate to cut out that crowd, then are you just going to sit alone at home all the time? How about making sure you're surrounding yourself with the right people, right? Okay, your next 90 seconds.
you've written down, I struggle with internet pornography, or maybe you don't want to use that word, I struggle with inappropriate material on the internet. Call it what it is. You don't intend to go looking for it. It's just like at the end of the day, you're checking a few emails. Maybe I'll just check a few funny YouTubes. I need a laugh at the end of the day. And then the video finishes, and then, you know, it gives you those suggested videos to watch, and there's a rather risque picture. Your pulse increases, and you just watch that one, and all of a sudden, half an hour has gone by, and your mind is full of a lot of images that you never should have looked at. So you don't mean to, but that's kind of the pattern of what's happening. So 90 seconds, what do you do? Okay, what are some ideas? Fabi.
Make sure you're not alone.
Okay, so make sure you're not alone when you're checking your emails. Okay, that could be one solution. Tim.
Recognize the red flags, so in your scenario, when you're checking your emails and then you ended up on YouTube, realize at that point that, well, maybe this is a red flag because last time I was on YouTube, I went down this trail that didn't end in a good spot. So before I hit play on the first YouTube video, which might be about how to fix your car or whatever, stop it there before you get tempted by going back in your mind to what you did the last time you were on YouTube.
Good idea, because especially as it gets later at night, our level of focus and diligence goes down. So that's a great idea. Just learn how to fix the car in the morning. That'll be fine. Anybody else? Josh.
Just along with that YouTube example, something simple like turning off the autoplay so it doesn't continue on to move to the next one.
Good idea. Josh.
Make use of the tools that are out there that will make it so that there's no way you can access this. Don't think that you're going to be strong enough to be able to deal with this at 1 o'clock in the morning when you're tired. Use the tools that are out there. If you know of good tools, share that with others.
Good idea. I think YouTube and even Google Images, like there are certain filters that, so they can try to filter out more of the more questionable material. And then there's also heard of actual software you can get that blocks going to certain types of sites, which takes a bit of work to dial them in so they're actually functional. But those are all good ideas. Any last,
So you're talking about making error happen, so praying without ceasing, if that's your first reaction to any difficult situation, you do that almost as soon as you're
Bring God in early in the situation, great idea. And one idea that hasn't come up, but it came up in the last time we did this workshop, is someone said, well, maybe don't have your phone in your room at night. That's a tough one. Because Does anybody know what we used to do before we had alarm clocks on our phone? Yeah, but you know, even having a habit of plugging it in when you come in at the other side of the room, even at least before you go to bed, that takes away the temptation to laze around and waste time with the end. Okay, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, so maybe just quickly blast out your scenario is 2 weeks to a youth conference, and I don't even have like a quarter of the workbook done. Every time I try to sit down, I get distracted with video games, novels, movies. Yeah. That'll be a good one to have an accountability partner with just for your workbook. But with you guys all know Stephen Bartholomew. So years ago, we had a buddy system going. We were trying to encourage each other to get up early in the morning and do Bible study. And so we agreed that we were going to be honest with each other about how we were doing. So he'd ask me, how are you doing getting up early? I've been slacking. So do we go back to the phone call? Yep. And so we would, the first one up would call the other person's house. And it's actually more helpful when you're married, because when that phone rings, you get a swift boot to get down there and pick up that phone before it wakes up the kids. But that's a really cool thing too. Encourage each other to, you know, get up and start. When I tell you, when you start the day with some Bible study of some sort, the whole day goes better. So, okay, last one. We will take a few minutes for this one because I think this is important. Boyfriend, girlfriend, inappropriate contact, inappropriate touching. So you acknowledge that, you know, you go and drop off said person at their house, you're saying goodnight, and maybe things get a little bit carried away. Certain things which are appropriate when you're married and they're not when you're not. So what are you going to do? 90 seconds. Okay, so suggestions. What if you're both very spiritually minded? Like, I'll give you the other magnet here. Like, it's powerful. So, but very good. Open communication is very, very important. And it may be something that you're both feeling like is not good, but you're actually embarrassed to talk to each other about it. But getting it out in the open will help you both. Yep. Tim? Unless you just stop brushing your teeth, and that'd be really easy, right? Anything else?
Don't get a girlfriend?
Yeah. It's expensive, like, totally. Any last items?
Yeah.
Josh?
Don't think that because your boyfriend and girlfriend that gives you license to think thoughts about the other person. So, in other words, go back to the root. Don't let your thinking go down a path which then can turn into action.
Very good. Martha?
Remember that you want that person in the kingdom. If you really love them with a self-sacrificing love, you're not going to pursue those feelings which are really ultimately selfish feelings.
So very good.
One
other good habit is if you're talking about setting your boundaries up front, if you both agree, if you want God part of your life, agree that you're gonna pray at the end of every day. And if you know that prayer is coming, it just helps you to be more wise in your conduct. So thank you everybody for your great ideas. Again, a lot of this stuff, none of this is rocket science, but it takes talking about the situations and encouraging each other with great ideas of how to best conduct ourselves. So in review, obviously prayer is going to be top, and Uncle Jay is going to talk about prayer in general in our next devotion. But be honest with yourself and with God. Take steps to remove the sources of temptation. Have an emergency response plan. Fill the void with wholesome things and find an accountability partner.